Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by the Aero Cart by Works. Works has reinvented lifting and hauling with the new Works Aero Cart with the Aero Cart 8-in-1 all-purpose carrier. You don't need to be carried, bro, because heavy loads are easy to lift and haul. It's like having a wheelbarrow, a trailer mover, and a dolly all in one. Because with patented turbo lift technology, it makes lifting 200 pounds feel like you're lifting just 17 pounds. With two oversized wheels, even awkward loads stay balanced so you'll never strain your back. You could see people lifting heavy bags of topsoil, gravel, even refrigerators without any help in the clips that you can watch at works.com. The Aero Cart by Works has changed me from just a know-it-all to a move-it-all, lift-it-all, haul it all. So go to aerocart.com and you can enter promo code RHAP at checkout to receive free shipping plus 10% off. That's even better than winning Survivor potentially. Well, it's up there. Go to aerocart.com, AEROCART.com, and receive free shipping plus 10% off at checkout. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here to talk about why a bunch of people lost and why Michelle won Survivor. Ko-Rong, and here with me to talk about the rules for the final time this season. Please welcome back David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Tired.
This is tired.
This has been draining.
The off season.
Not yet. It's not. Not for me.
Oh, okay. Yes. So what was the tiring part? Getting through 14 weeks of Survivor or going through getting ready for this podcast?
This podcast.
Okay.
It was a little more difficult than a lot of the times. Certainly a lot more difficult than the Jeremy one was.
Yeah. Well, take us through your process, because I think that some people might have the misconception you sort of just like watch the episode and then come on and then sort of pontificate about things. So take us through what you've been busy doing.
Well, normal process is obviously watch the episode, take a bunch of notes there, while at the same time trying to live tweet it, which is always fun. Then after it's aired, there's all the interviews. There's your interview. There's the other interviews. There's secret scenes. There's confessionals. Sometimes there's stuff buried in the most unlikely places. And so I go through all of those to see what nuggets I can pull out. So in this case, I went through every jury speaks. Video, the secret scenes, you know, like I said, all the interviews, and just had to try and figure out, okay, where does this all fit in? Because, you know, what we saw on the show left a lot of people scratching their heads. I mean, pretty much immediately after the check was given to Michelle, people were tweeting at me saying, "Why, David, tell us why."
Yeah.
And I was flummoxed at the time. So, it took some work there.
And you feel like that you have reached some good answers in terms of why Michelle was the winner.
I feel that way. I think that some people will disagree. As a matter of fact, it wouldn't surprise me if everyone disagrees with at least something that I say.
Okay. So par for the course.
Right.
All right. So we'll get into that. And as well as we will talk about why Sydney lost, why Ty lost, why Aubrey lost, and a whole bunch of other things along the way. So it should be a very fun one last go round for Survivor Ko-Rong.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so any big thoughts on the finale before we jump into anything? I need to talk about why everybody lost Sia's $50,000 except for Ty.
I just feel bad for Keith, that's all.
Yeah. He posted on Twitter, he had posted a video. He did not follow the advice of Rob has a PR firm that he basically just said like, "Hey, Sia, I saw what you said at the finale, and so we're going to try to come out to your show in New Orleans, so we'll see. Sia, if he is able to get anything going with her." Can you imagine Keith at the Sia concert? Just that visual of what that's going to be like. Keith and Big D at the Sia concert.
Standing there going, why is she off in a corner there? And why isn't she facing the audience? I don't understand what's going on here.
And also, David, before we jump into this, I'm also very excited to be seeing you in person in Reno this week at Run It Up Reno. We're going to do some fun Survivor stuff there. I believe that for the Survivor show that we're planning, I don't think that you need a ticket as far as I understand in terms of that. I think we're just going to be at the Peppermill Resort in Reno for this big show we're doing with Boston Rob and Tyson and Stephen Fishback. I think Coach is going to be there. Anna Kate. So it should be a very fun night that we're going to have that as a podcast as well at Run It Up Reno.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too, that you don't need a ticket. I actually called the Peppermill to ask them that.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me to their poker room, and their poker room guy, whoever was there, said, nope, you don't need anything special for anything. You can come in to anything you want. So, you know, if you can't trust a poker room manager, who can you trust?
If you're going to be at Run It Up Reno, or if you're just going to be in the area, definitely let me know on Twitter. I'd love to say hi to anybody who's going to be out there. Okay, so let's jump into this Survivor Korong finale. Where do you want to start here, David?
Just looking back at our predictions, we got a few things right, got a few things wrong, and the producers kind of fooled us, pulled a fast one on us with that, telling us that there would be an extra tribal council and not telling us it would be to vote off Neil.
Yeah, I believe that you said, well, one thing we know for sure, it is definitely a final two.
Yes, I said that because they said there would be three tribal councils. And I almost said at the time, unless the producers are just totally messing with us. But that was so far out of the realm of my thoughts that I didn't even bother to say it. But yeah, they messed with us.
No.
Sorry, David. All right. So yeah, final three. And a lot to unpack from this finale episode of the show. So, all right, where do you want to go first?
Well, last season we talked about all the finalists together as a group because everything kind of fit in nicely. But this time, the more I've thought about it, the more I feel like Sydney's loss was separate from the way the whole final three happened. So I think we should address why Sydney lost first.
Okay. All right. So let's quickly go through why Sydney lost. The first rule is to scheme and plot. Sydney was a schemer and a plotter.
Oh, yes. Sydney definitely understood the need to scheme and plot. And, you know, she did a great job of it. From what we saw, she and Aubrey pretty well controlled the voting after the merge. That's quite a feat. And she was always thinking about the game. In fact, in a confessional from the second to last episode, she said she strategized about everything, including rewards, which is, you know, so a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
In the early goings, you know, when she was solid with Scott and especially Jason, she kept pretty quiet. But then she saw what was happening around her as the game progressed, and she realized she needed to change things up. According to her interview with Josh, one of the few that she was able to give, other players were telling her that Jason was making final two deals with them. And as she said, the last time she checked, he wanted to go to the final two with her. So she, this part's funny, she ran a little experiment and gave them a chance to pick the right side, telling them, hey, let's get rid of Nick first. But they just kind of put her in a corner, saying they were going to do it their way. And well, that was that.
Don't pick me, boo.
Exactly. And this pretty well does line up with our analysis back when Nick lost, mm-hmm. which was that Sydney saw new allies moving in to take her place and didn't like the look of things. So she knew she had to make a new plan, and she did. The one vote Sydney didn't control was obviously the final one. And I think part of the problem was she relied on Michelle to do it for her. Michelle had assured her that she didn't need to worry about it. You know, she had Ty locked down. So Sydney got stuck in a tiebreaker because Michelle wasn't able to convince Ty to switch sides.
Mm-hmm. In fairness, though, I mean, that for Ty to do that, unless Ty felt like it was a final two, and I asked him about this, he said, no, it was just because I loved Aubrey so much. So I think that Michelle and Sydney were not expecting Ty to make the illogical move and keep Aubrey around.
Right, exactly. And who knows, maybe Michelle could have worked on it more, but I think Sydney, at least from what we saw, I don't know how much Sydney actually worked on Ty directly.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of put her fate in that situation in Michelle's hands. Michelle said, no, I've got it. You're good. You don't even need to practice fire making.
Yeah.
Sydney, by her own admission, had never touched a flint up till that point. So that put her in a bad position because it was the one time she was not the one taking the action.
Mm-hmm.
And so other than that, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Sydney knew exactly what she had to do in terms of this rule.
Do you want to drill down at all on don't scheme and plot too much?
Yeah, because, not a whole lot, actually, because I think Sydney did take good care to avoid violating this rule. She talked repeatedly in confessionals and interviews about the importance of loyalty. So she certainly didn't want to be the one backstabbing too soon or too much. when she had suspicions that her allies were taking a different path, she didn't just jump in and blindside them. She even gave them a chance first, and then she blindsided them. Now, judging by what we saw at Ponderosa, Jason and Scott may have other opinions or may have had other opinions on whether she backstabbed when she didn't need to. But since she didn't make it to the finals, that part didn't end up mattering.
Rule three is be flexible. Famously, I believe it was the episode where Nick went out, Ty and Sydney went tip-top toes to try to battle for immunity, and Ty compared himself to bamboo and said that Sydney was like a redwood, inflexible. Did you feel like that was what her game was like, too?
Well, we'll get to Ty and bamboo later, but I do think that despite the fact that she talked about how important loyalty was, she also recognized it couldn't be blind loyalty. So if she were that inflexible, she would have just gone along with her fellow bronze and hoped for the best. But she saw what was happening and made a new path for herself. And then along the way, she created several other possible paths. She got to the point, really, that Aubrey, Joe, and Michelle all wanted to bring her to the final three, which is a great spot to be in. I think the only thing that stopped Sydney from getting to the end was the combination of Joe being medevaced and Michelle winning immunity. You know, last week we were both pretty certain that Sydney would have been voted out if Joe hadn't been medevaced. But, but it seems we were wrong, because when you interviewed Aubrey and Ty together, they both said they would have voted out Michelle at the final five. So, you know, it seems like Aubrey, again, still wanted to go to the end with Sydney. And even beyond that alliance, I feel like Sydney gave herself additional flexibility and options by continuing to talk to Jason even when he was on the outs. Per her interview with Josh, she did consider what he said, but then decided not to go with it. However, just even talking to him and thinking about it was a good idea in case a better plan could come out of it. So, no, she was not inflexible like a redwood when it came to her strategy.
Okay, rule four is don't let your emotions control you. How about Sydney and her emotions?
Think again. She did a good job here. You know, when we saw her pregame information, we were all waiting for the angry side of her personality storm to come out. That's right. And she did a good job in keeping storm down to less than a drizzle.
Yeah, it barely rained.
It barely rained. You know, a good example can be seen in the Entertainment Weekly secret scene from the episode when Scott was voted out. Sydney talked about how she had to go against her usual instincts and associate with people she didn't like, even talking to Scott and Jason again. She told Josh more recently that she'd have been willing to work with them again if they hadn't gone into sabotage mode, though she acknowledged she would have had to keep her guard up with them. So, you know, she knew that it was a game. She didn't have to get emotional about it. And perhaps more interesting was that she said in a confessional that she would have easily voted out Michelle if the opportunity had been there near the end. And then, of course, she obviously tried to vote out her most solid ally, Aubrey, at the final four. In both cases, she was clearly very tight with each of the women, but she knew she had to do certain things to move forward in the game and give herself a better chance. As she said a few tribal councils ago, who will you beat? That's the question. It wasn't about who you like better, and she knew it. She said, what, at least twice that made the air, this isn't a we game, it's a me game. So she was able to make emotional bonds, but she was also able to acknowledge that the emotional bonds that mattered most were the ones between herself and her mother, and she was trying to win the game for her.
We saw her do a good job also at that point when they lost the reward challenge and Joe came back and he wanted to make the fire bigger. We saw Sydney in confessional talk about,
we're in the middle of Koran. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, babies.
But she didn't tell off Mr. Joe or anything like that to his face. So I think that she was pretty good at hiding her frustration with certain people.
Well, yeah, and especially if she had gotten mad there, then the storm would have come out and put out the fire.
Right, right. So that really would have upset Joe even more.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, rule five is pretend to be nice, play the social game. How did Sydney do with the social game?
Well, I think you already just answered part of that with the pretending to be nice is related to Joe, because she knew she had to do that as she was controlling her emotions. You know, beyond Joe, we can reference the situation with Scott and Jason again. And then she said in one of her web confessionals that the social game came naturally to her. She just decided to wing it. She didn't plan it. She just went on with it and it came to her and she felt it was one of her strong suits. I can't disagree with that assessment.
So then rule number six is don't be too much of a threat. I actually thought that Sydney was pretty under the radar in terms of a threat. I feel like under any normal circumstances, we would sort of look at Sydney coming into the season. Oh, well, she'll be voted out right around the merge. Too big of a threat in the immunity challenges. But that didn't seem like that was how people were thinking of her out there.
Yeah. And I think it's because just the challenge wins were spread out so much. And people got used to her by the time it was the merge. So it wasn't like they just dropped this super muscular, strong woman in there out of nowhere. They knew her as Sydney more than the big challenge threat. But even with that said, we finally had a rule that she didn't 100% follow. And I mean, let's face it, it would have been difficult for her to do so because, well, she did well with the other rules and she made it quite far through the game. While many of us at home were wondering, why aren't you realizing that she's going to be difficult to beat in the end? Honestly, if Michelle hadn't won final immunity, Sydney might have made it through the last vote, even as a threat. Now, it does seem that Aubrey started realizing how much of a threat Sydney truly was during that reward that caused Joe's medevac. But I still feel like Aubrey would have gone along with Sydney if Michelle had been an available target.
Mm-hmm.
So Michelle winning immunity changed everything. Aubrey could have gone to Sydney and joined up with her to vote out Ty, as the two of them had joined up on so many other votes. But instead, I think that finally kind of kicked it in to Aubrey that, hey, there's a threat right here in front of you and it's time to remove it.
Yeah. And ironically, it was the strategic threat of somebody who is a threat to win the game and not really that, oh, this is a physical threat that's in front of me. So it's sort of interesting that she comes into this game with this physicality. And that's really never ultimately why people are the most afraid of her.
Right. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, how many weightlifting challenges are there? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said by the end, she was beat up. I think she said in the Josh interview, she got home, she couldn't do a single pull up.
Oh, my God.
You know, and so Debbie would have been very disappointed at her for that.
Yeah. Rule seven is vote off the weak, then the strong, then the weak, and then the strong. Does that apply here?
It does for the last time. You know, and the vote against Sydney was clearly a vote against a strong member of the alliance who threatened Aubrey's chances at the end. So there's no surprise there. The only question was really whether Ty should have gone with Sydney and Michelle instead of Aubrey. At the time, many thought he was basically handing Aubrey $1 million. As it turned out, he was handing her $100,000. I don't think the eventual winner outcome would have changed, but obviously we'll get to that later.
Okay, so then in these appendices, do whatever it takes to get idols. Now, we also saw Sydney famously not do whatever it takes to get idols. She really backed away from the Alicia versus Jason battle for the immunity idol on Braun Beach. Was that a violation?
I don't know, because she was so tight with Jason at that point. I think that if she had gone in there and fought for it, it really would have, put Jason on his guard. And I think at that point, if you're that strongly allied with someone and they're going after that idol, maybe just best bet to sit back and let them do the pushing and shoving and get the idol. And then you can worry about working it out later, because why get into a big fight with your own tight ally?
She really did play that part of the game extremely well. I have to give her even more credit for that, because she sort of takes a look at how things are going, what's going on with Alicia. And it's like, okay, that's not working. Let me go ahead. I'm just going to sort of not say anything. I'm just going to go with the flow and then sort of bide my time. I mean, I kind of feel like that it's almost in some ways, it's familiar to me. It feels like Tambaqui. No,
I don't even Tambaqui.
That was my tribe, David.
Oh, your tribe name.
I'm going to sit here. I'm going to bide my time. And okay. Then these guys, you know, I don't feel like I'm part of the loop of what Butch and Roger are doing. I'm going to go ahead and flip on these guys once we get to the merge.
Yeah, I never remember tribe names. I just don't.
Sorry, David, it's my fault because I broke my own cardinal rule of I hate it when survivors talk too much about their own season. So.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But yeah. I just in general, tribe names go in one ear, out the other, unless, you know, brain, beauty, brawn, that I can get, you know, but some made up name, forget it. I'm not going to remember that.
Sorry about that, David. All right. That's okay. So then let's talk about the final tribal council in terms of positioning in front of the jury. How was Sydney doing with that? Because we saw her at Ponderosa in her Ponderosa video where Jason and Scott and possibly Julia were not even talking to her.
Yeah, and that was a weird situation to say the least, because she had been talking to Jason beforehand. So I don't know if, you know, it was fine or Jason was just talking to her as a, you know, because he had to for strategy. And then once they were out of that, they went to, yeah, we're just, you know, we're not going to be dealing with you at all. And we saw them rooting against her during the fire making challenge. So it would have been interesting. I think we'll probably talk more a little bit about that later, but I don't know that there's anything else she could have done at that point. And then, you know, what the jury, what she turns into on the jury, we'll also talk about more later.
Okay, so Sydney seemed like she did a really, really good job this season. Why did she lose the game?
Well, you're right. She did do a really good job. And some people, I think Steven, have said that Sydney might have been the best player of the season. I don't see how that could be true, Rob, because the best player never gets voted out just before final tribal council, right?
Yeah, you heard that.
Yeah, but whether or not she was
heard the, that. Yeah.
But I'm sorry, I broke the cardinal rule of talking too much about your season.
Yes. But, the mark of somebody who doesn't really know what they're talking about when they only talk about their season.
Yeah. But, you know, whether or not Sydney was the best this season, she certainly was very good. She knew how to scheme and plot without overdoing it. She was flexible. She kept Storm at bay, and she did well at the social game. The one thing she couldn't prevent was the eventual realization that she had become a threat in front of the jury. And the one time she didn't handle the plotting directly, it didn't come through for her to keep her from having to try to make fire. And that is why Sydney lost.
Okay. All right. So now we're down to three. Where do you want to go from here in terms of talking about the rules? Are we just going to reset and go back to tie?
Well, we'll reset, but I think we can discuss all the finalists at once.
Okay.
Now that said, I do want to do things a little bit differently because I want to discuss rules one and two at the same time, because okay. In this case, they're even more intertwined than they usually are. And you'll see why in a minute here.
All right. Scheming and plotting, and don't scheme and plot too much. What are you thinking with these three finalists? Or are we talking about just the losing finalists?
No, we're talking about all three at once.
Great.
Okay, first, a reminder. Scheming and plotting is still the number one important skill set on Survivor. I know right now there are people yelling at me through their iPhones.
Yes.
And up in arms because people over the last few days have been saying, no, it's the social game. This proves it. Michelle won with the social game. That's it.
So your rules are like a pyramid, you're saying, is that there is an order of importance. Like the bottom of the pyramid is rule one. You have to satisfy this checkbox. Whereas you get into the social game later, in your mind, you say that the social game has less of an importance than the first couple of rules?
I do.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. This is good stuff, David, because now people are going to be getting worked up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even Michelle was lecturing people at Tribal Council a few weeks ago about how players have to show the jury that they played the game. So she knew it. She said it to the jury. Other finalists knew it and talked about it. And even Sydney knew it and said in the same Tribal Council that she thinks the jury will respect people who played the game. More importantly than that, in those jury speaks videos, we heard many of the jurors saying they respect gameplay above everything else. They wanted someone who was indeed really going out there and playing. And this is where we hit a snag.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was watching those videos and seeing discussion about them on Twitter, I was scratching my head. And I wasn't the only one. So, for example, the great Sarah Freeman, who I'm sure is busily working on a blog right now for RHAP, on her thoughts about the finale, she was trying to work through this finale at the same time I was, and we kept seeing similar things. the jurors would talk about what they wanted to see, like good gameplay, which we thought described how Aubrey had played. But then those same jurors criticized Aubrey and voted for Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to reconcile that. The first thought was, well, they could be bitter and they're just rationalizing things. But it didn't seem that way to me. So I started to wonder whether we were all a victim of the televised nature of the game.
Mm.
We saw Aubrey's game.
Yes.
Did the jurors see Aubrey's game? And we've seen this phenomenon before. As a matter of fact, it's even discussed in my full version of the second rule. That rule tells players, keep your scheming secret. But there's also a paragraph in there that says, don't keep your scheming so secret that if you get to the finals, nobody knows you were playing the game.
Mm.
And that specifically references the most famous situation, which was your know-it-all's partner, Steven, in his original season. Because he got to the end with his partner in crime, JT. They had worked on strategy pretty much the whole way through. And JT got all the credit, even though Steven was pretty much an equal partner. At the time, at least one of the jurors told me in an interview that it wasn't that they saw him as more of a backstabber or that they were bitter. They didn't give him enough credit because they only saw his scheming and plotting on television, not in the game. I feel like that's one reason Steven put so much emphasis on making visible moves in his second season to correct that.
Mm.
So,
and having a good edit.
Yes, yes. So considering the situation we were looking at this season, the apparent contradictions between what the jurors were saying and doing and some of the things that have been said in other interviews when players were voted off, everything started to come together. And then you mentioned on your season wrap up with Josh that you saw Jason at the after party. Mm-hmm. And he said something about how he would have voted for Aubrey if he knew everything we saw.
I said that he was open to that possibility. Yes.
Right. Well, I wanted to clarify that. So I went one step further. I contacted Jason, asked him about his vote. We had one last Twitter press conference for the season.
Okay. What did he say?
So he said he can't speak for everyone, but he knows that for himself and Julia, this was not a bitter jury situation. They were on the jury and they only saw so much. He and Aubrey had a lot of respect for each other, but they never actually worked together. So he didn't get to see what she was doing, how she was playing. The final tribal council was, of course, much longer than we saw. And Aubrey apparently spoke at great length about what she did, how she played, the moves she made. But a lot of the jury just didn't believe her. Mm-hmm. They hadn't seen it. And they were like, yeah, yeah, whatever. You know, as Jason said to me, she was really good at hiding what she was doing, but to the point it hurt her because we could not see it get done.
Mm.
He then did add, she played by far the best game and should be the winner when it comes to the final three, but she did not let the jury know what she did. He just said the jurors didn't realize how well she played the game until they saw the show. The only people who saw it were those in her alliance. For example, the jurors thought all she did was carry Joe. And they didn't even view that as a strength. They thought that was a weakness of using him as a crutch, which they also echoed in some of their Jury Speaks videos. So all this time, we've been talking about Joe as Aubrey's extra vote advantage, and it actually caused some of the jurors to be mad at her and not vote for her. So it turns out we did have an advantage curse this season.
Oh, no. It always comes back to that.
It always does.
Yeah. So, David, in terms of how your rules are set up, then how does this factor into things? Are you saying that is it part of scheming and plotting of scheme and plot and then don't scheme and plot too much, but scheme and plot enough so that people can tell you were scheming and plotting? Because you would think that in the perfect world, your scheming and plotting would seem like it was no effort at all. Like you weren't even doing anything that was a scheme or a plot. Things were just happening.
Right. And it is hard to fit in because, and it hasn't happened very often. Obviously, you know, the two that stand out are right now and Steven. But it's probably happened in between there. I can't think of an exact situation, but it is hard. It's kind of like, Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you know, don't scheme and plot too much. Don't scheme and plot not enough. You got to scheme and plot just right.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make it known somehow. And without being there, it's hard for me to say exactly how.
I talk about in the evolution strategy, and shout out to Alex Kidwell, who reminded me about this on Facebook, about how the final tribal council is sort of like you're at a magic show for 39 days and the magician does all of these tricks. But then it's the kind of magician where then they show you how they did the secret, where the audience is like, OK, I know that that wasn't really like, you know, a dove in your hat or, you know, a rabbit in your jacket pocket. Okay, I know that there was something going on there, but when you try to say, oh, it was magic, or are you just sort of like a don't give up the trick, I think that really then people are more impressed when you sort of show, okay, this is exactly what I had up my sleeve, and this is how I pulled off this trickery.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the final tribal council. I don't want to jump all the way over to that. Mm-hmm. I do think that she tried, but I also wonder if the fact that those three people who did not vote for her and who did not realize what she had done also were not speaking to the person who did all that stuff with her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I wonder if that played into it. But even to continue with Jason, you know, he said that at the time he would have absolutely stood by his vote. Now, having seen the whole show, he would change it and give it to Aubrey. But here's the thing. The game is played at the time, not later when you see it all on TV. I'm sure you remember, and you know, hopefully many listeners remember, when Big Brother mm-hmm. showed everything to the jurors in, I believe it was the third season, and cost the best player the win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, viewers were up in arms about it, and the show never did it again. I remember I was so pissed. What are you doing showing that to them?
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're turning around and saying, well, you know, they didn't get to see everything. Well, they can't. And so I'm not talking about,
so you're
about
saying they
this.
Should reverse the Big Brother 3 rulings and that they should let survivors see the whole show before they vote?
No.
Oh, okay. Just checking. What a twist.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, the other thing I'm not doing is I'm not in, you know, using this as an indictment of the jurors who feel this way now, because it's more of an important point related to both the first and second rules and a counterpoint to those who keep talking about only the social game being important. Because a lot of the people who were saying that were using the result of this final vote to support the idea that scheming and plotting and strategy isn't as important. But we can see that it actually is. Most of the jurors wanted to vote for somebody who played the game hard. They just didn't see it. So per the words of Jason, Scott, and Julia in their Jury Speaks videos, they thought Aubrey was making her moves based on fear, indecisiveness, playing defense. They wanted her to play the game harder, which is why their statements seem contradictory, because mm-hmm. they were contradictory with what we saw, but not with what they saw. You know, last week I made a comment that the background person usually loses, and Aubrey said in the finale she was the woman behind the curtain. Well, being behind the curtain is in the background, and that problem does have to fall, unfortunately, on Aubrey. You know, I think earlier in the season, I recall Stephen joking that Aubrey was just like him, and it turns out he was right in more ways than we ever imagined. So we've got that. But obviously, we have two other players to discuss in terms of these two rules, including winner Michelle.
Okay.
For her part, as I've already mentioned, she knew that she had to demonstrate some scheming and plotting to the jury. In that final tribal council, she made sure to emphasize she didn't just slide through. She maybe didn't make huge moves, but she made little adjustments and fought her way through. She hoped people could see that she strategically made game moves. So Scott said in his Jury Speaks video that he had no respect for Michelle's game early. She was just like an extra vote for Sydney and Aubrey, but wouldn't jump to Scott and Jason with Julia. But then Michelle began to grow on him because she did things later and grew in the game. Even after Ty outright said that she wasn't in the alliance in that tribal council, Michelle refused to flip and she was just going to trust her alliance. And Scott at the time was sitting there thinking it was a really stupid move, but it turned out she made it work. And to add to it from the Jason discussion, he also explained some of their thinking as far as Michelle went. So each week, the jury would expect her to be voted off. They didn't think she'd make it through. And each week she made it through. They saw her on the bottom with them. And then she jumped into that core alliance and kept staying there. So they took that as an indication, since they obviously couldn't see what was going on. They figured it must mean that she was further into that core alliance than they had thought. So they were giving her more credit than she potentially deserved. But that's what they believed they were seeing at the time. You know, speaking of being at the bottom, Michelle herself said she'd been kind of on the bottom the whole game, but she held on. She would push to ensure that she was still trusted, still part of the overall alliance, no matter what Ty might have thought or said. Mm-hmm. And so she wasn't just sitting back and being carried.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
Yeah. I also wonder if that moment at Tribal Council, when she sort of told Ty off in front of everybody, especially if people were feeling like Ty was this zero vote jury goat, and then she was able to sort of like really put him in his place and tell him,
it sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
When she had that really big Tribal Council moment in the episode where Jason went home, I wonder if that also sort of like helped that narrative.
Well, I think it did, because you have Ty who's saying, I'm the one solidly in the alliance. We don't even know where you are. I don't know why you're in this alliance.
Yeah, I don't know why we have an extra person in this alliance.
Yeah. And then she shoots back at him and then she sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's sticking around, she must be doing something right. Ty must be mistaken. She must be right there in the core.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what they were seeing. And, you know, she did other things to help with the image too. Was, you know, obviously the one thing that has been talked about a lot was getting rid of Julia. She said in interviews that she was the architect of that vote. If she was, good for her. I wish we would have seen it, because I don't understand why the producers wouldn't put that on TV if they were looking for material to show us why Michelle won, because that would have been perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's possible that Michelle may just think that she suggested it when the others were already planning it, or maybe she did. We don't know. But no matter whether she planned it or just helped execute it, Julia had told us previously in her interviews that Michelle had fooled her prior to the vote. And for that, Michelle certainly earns kudos for not alerting Julia, because the second rule reminds players, don't give any warnings. It could come back to bite you. So many times we've seen people say, well, you're my friend, I just want to let you know you're being voted out. Mm-hmm. She didn't do that. She just let her go.
You also say in the second rule, don't form an obvious couple or duo. And by voting out Julia, she ends up taking out the person who everybody's looking at her as sort of her obvious partner. So she becomes less of a threat at that point.
Right, exactly. And we talked about that back when Julia was voted out. So that pretty well sums up Michelle in terms of this rule. As for Ty, well, he's just not in the same league as the women he faced when it came to strategizing. He did make what's arguably the biggest move of the game in blindsiding Scott, but I chalk that up mostly to emotion rather than pure strategy, because there were several times when Ty could have made solid strategic moves and even talked about doing so, but in the end, he didn't. You know, in the finale, he said, ultimately, I want that $1 million at any cost.
What if it costs $2 million?
That would be a bad investment. That sounds like the top type of investment I make. Buy high, sell low.
No.
You know, we later found out he wasn't actually willing to pay that cost, even though it wasn't $2 million. You know, he also said in the finale, I don't want to betray her, but at some point, alliance has to break.
Mm-hmm.
But then he never broke it. You know, on top of that, he just didn't have the knack for real scheming and plotting, because he was far too open about what he was planning. I mean, how many times did he spill all the beans at Tribal Council?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I lost count. But every time he did, he was violating the second rule.
Yeah.
Now, before we move on, I do have one more item on Aubrey.
Okay.
The question has been raised about whether she backstabbed Debbie too soon, which caused a chain reaction leading to only getting second place at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But in your interview, Aubrey said that the problem with keeping Debbie was that she couldn't work with Ty while Debbie was still around. Debbie was going in a different direction. So as with everything else, it's not so simple. You can't just go back and say, well, if you had done this one thing differently, because if she does that differently, everything changes from that point forward. The only thing Aubrey could hope was that Debbie would give credit instead of being bitter. That didn't happen. There was indeed a bitter juror, but it wasn't Jason, Scott, or Julia. It was Debbie.
Uh-oh.
So there's a total blindside for you.
Damn, baby.
All right. So you ready to talk about rule number three?
I am.
Okay. Rule number three, of course, is be flexible. Okay. Where do you want to start in this conversation?
Well, I would say all three finalists were flexible in their own ways. So we'll start with Ty this time, because he told us during one of those endurance challenges, the one you mentioned, that he was flexible like bamboo.
Yes, he was.
He would bend but never break. But this was to the point that you and Parvati suggested on the recap show when Jason was voted out that Ty had been too flexible, you know, bending with the winds of change like that same bamboo. And I think it may have seemed that way at the time, but the weeks that followed showed us that Ty wasn't really all that flexible after all. We have to remember that the most important point in this rule is you can't just attach yourself to one alliance. And once Ty flipped on Jason and Scott, that's exactly what he did. He kept coming back to Aubrey, even after she gave him several reasons not to do so.
Mm-hmm.
It did get him to the final three, but once he was there, he really didn't have much of a chance to win.
What about in terms of Aubrey and Michelle?
Well, I've seen it suggested that Michelle did actually play in a way that essentially adopted this bamboo outlook of bending back and forth but never breaking.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw it first on Twitter, and I wish I could remember who I saw say it so I could give them proper credit. So whoever said it, if you're listening, thanks. Because it is a pretty good comparison. You know, we saw Michelle move from one alliance to the other or stay in the middle. The winds of the game were blowing in different directions at different times. And on many of those occasions, it looked like that wind would snap Michelle right out of the game. But instead, she bent with those winds and then came back standing up straight and tall.
Mm-hmm.
If she needed to lean towards Julia, she did. When she needed to bend away from her, she did that as well. So part of this rule specifically says if you see the majority as leaning in another direction, you need to make sure you're part of that majority, which means you have to have your finger on the pulse of the tribe and all the people in it. I can't say that was always the case with Michelle, because there were times when she was left out in the cold, such as the Scott blindside. But there were few of those, and she recovered from them nicely. At the time, I think I mentioned before, it may have seemed to us like she was just moving from the bottom of one alliance to the bottom of another, but she made it work for her.
Mm.
And this is the part of her strategy that Jeff Probst really pushed at the reunion in those couple of minutes where he talked to her. It was interesting because he asked her about her game and then started basically telling her what she did.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was in a
court. He'll do that.
Yeah, I wanted to yell, objection, leading the witness, you know. But he clearly wanted to make sure that she talked about specific things, and this was one of them. You know, so in response to that, she said she stayed in the middle, she knew when to bounce, and the key was feeling when the vibe at camp shifted and knowing when to hop. In the meantime, she wasn't being blamed for anything, and she wasn't on the chopping block.
Yeah.
So she did a good job.
In terms of Michelle's game, in terms of being flexible, tell me if you think that this is the case. I feel like that she almost followed a blueprint that you would use to win Big Brother more so than a blueprint that you would use to win Survivor, where sort of like, okay, keep a low profile, stay in the middle, don't get blood on your hands, avoid being the HOH that sees the, you know, the, oh, you sent this person out of the house, you sent this person out of the house, they're mad, and then cap it off at the end with some comp wins. And then that sounds like a lot of different Big Brother winners.
It does. It does. And I mean, when I used to do this, you know, the same discussion for Big Brother, a lot of the rules were similar. But yes, you know, there was definitely more floating in Big Brother to the point that people, you know, had a backlash against the floaters. And so then you've got that whole situation going on. But it was in some ways a similar strategy.
Well, there's a difference between floaters and people who are just there and doing nothing. So that floaters sort of took on a negative connotation with Rachel Riley, with floaters get a life vest. But I've never said that that is a negative way to play the game.
Right. Well, I never agreed with Rachel in her definition of floaters. Yeah. So. Or in many things she said.
Well, let's not get too sidetracked. Because
yeah, probably not. Probably
a certain
not.
Subset of the audience is turning this off that we're talking about Big Brother. Okay.
Including Josh.
Yeah. All right. So then what about Aubrey in terms of her flexibility?
I think she went through stages early on. We saw that she was too indecisive, but she grew and changed while she was out there. She paired up with several partners and ended up, as we've said, being one of those in control of almost all the votes. She definitely had her finger on the pulse of the tribe, as I, you know, just discussed, because she and Sydney were the heartbeat. And she even used that very terminology in response to jury questions while also shooting down Ty when she said, I don't think he had his finger on the pulse of this game like I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when she saw that one of her partners had a strong feeling about something, they talked about it. She was often flexible enough to go with it. I will say that was not always a good thing, as, you know, we've suggested that they should have voted out Michelle instead of Jason several votes ago. That's obviously a bit easier to see in hindsight. And you and I talked about that at some length last week, which was, you know, do you listen to Joe or do you push back on Joe?
And in my exit interview with Aubrey, I did ask her about that specific moment, and she said that Joe was not having that. And Michelle sort of, I felt like, confirmed that, where she said she was closer with Joe than they made it out to be on the show. So I don't think that they had the votes to pull that off, but that should have been the move if you were going to outline how does Aubrey win the game that she ends up making there at the final six.
Right, right. But she was trying to play, you know, flexibly with her game partners, and it could be said, speaking of Joe, that she tied herself to Joe and later to Ty. So there may be some people out there wondering why I'm not criticizing that lack of flexibility, especially after what we just said, that, you know, she was trying to get Joe to do the Michelle thing, but he wouldn't do it. But the reason is Aubrey was usually the one leading those allies, not just following along.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a very critical vote was one case where that wasn't the situation, but most of the time she was leading. And we know there were instances when she didn't do exactly as they wanted her to do, such as the Peter vote and the Jason vote.
Mm-hmm. I also think that at that vote at the final nine where Debbie went home, I think that was a really good demonstration of her flexibility, where she wants to, you know, split the votes against the guys. That's not happening. So she says, OK, then I want to, instead, if I can't do that, then let's vote out Julia. Then Julia wins immunity. And then she says, OK, let's vote out our ally in Debbie, because I feel like that I can get Ty back into our good graces if Debbie's not around. So let's do that. So I think she really is thinking on her feet in a lot of these instances. And you saw her talking about being Cochran's dream girl, coming up with every single scenario.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I mean, unfortunately, like we said, certain members of the jury didn't see her coming up with those scenarios. They thought it was based on fear. But I do agree with you that it was based on flexibility. So, okay, we can't do this. What can we do? And, you know, earlier I mentioned that those same jurors saw her tight bond with Joe as more of a crutch. So they probably didn't see her being flexible. So I believe this could have been another aspect of the situation we already talked about, where the jurors perceived things differently than we saw on TV.
You know, even earlier in the game, when Neil was going to go out of the game, it looked like the votes were going to be on Neil. She says to Neil, well, I guess I'll vote for you if I have to. She's not sort of like, you know, drawing a line in the sand and saying that I cannot vote against my ally. I don't have that sort of flexibility.
Right. Yeah, that was when she said, I'll slit your throat if I have to. And he was like, well, I'm not giving you this idol.
All right. Rule number four, don't let your emotions control you. Which of these three do you want to start with?
Two of the three finalists did a good job with this rule, and I bet you can guess who the other one was.
Well, Ty is a very emotional guy.
Yeah, yeah, it was Ty. So we'll talk about him first. Ty knew what he was supposed to do here. He realized that he should not be playing Survivor emotionally. He was the one this season who uttered the ubiquitous reality TV quote, I didn't come here to make friends.
Mm-hmm. And he made friends with a chicken.
Oh my God, look at a chicken.
If you'd have asked me who would say that quote this mm-hmm. season,
everybody.
He'd have been the absolute last one on the list.
Yeah.
You know, but saying and doing are two very different things. And Ty's action showed he was usually on the emotional side. So, I mean, just running through some of the things. How did Aubrey pull Ty over to her side? An emotional appeal. How did she pull him back again after not supporting his anti-Michelle crusade? Another emotional appeal. You know, in the second case, Aubrey opened up to him and just totally played on his emotions, and he went with her, admitting that he's been playing the game with his heart. And then when it came to the final four, Ty had that conflict again. It was a tug of war, and the question was whether Ty would go with strategy to vote out the apparent threat Aubrey or emotion to keep his friend. Well, mm-hmm. we saw how that worked out.
Yeah.
In Ty's interview with Josh, he said there's something about Aubrey that he was really drawn to, even though he knew it might have been a mistake. She was like a best friend to him, and he wanted her in the final three with him, even though it wasn't great in the big picture. And this was even after she had agreements to vote with him a certain way twice and didn't. First, when Ty was that lone vote against Jason because he thought there was a plan to blindside Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Ty voted against Michelle while everybody else actually did vote out Jason. Yeah, I mean, Ty himself admitted she blindsided him twice, but he follows his heart. And, you know, that made him a lovable TV character. It undoubtedly helped him get $50,000 from Sia.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't make him such a great Survivor player in that regard.
Yeah, Ty often followed his heart and not his head. But what about our two remaining finalists in Michelle and Aubrey? Where do you want us to go there?
Well, I think Aubrey faced some of the same issues as Ty did when it came to her emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of what drew him to her. Earlier in the season, Aubrey talked about the heart and the brain constantly fighting. The difference was that in most cases, I do think Aubrey went with the brain. So, key example of this, you just mentioned when she voted out Debbie. From an emotional standpoint, that was probably the most difficult vote for Aubrey. But like you said, she felt she had to do it to move her game forward. Then, of course, there was another one of these at the final four when she realized she had to turn on her closest ally, Sydney, if she wanted to put herself in what she thought was the best position to win. Both Sydney and Aubrey had spoken in confessionals about how close they were to each other and how difficult it would be to say goodbye, yet both of them realized it had to be done. You know, one thing that is unclear to me is whether she would have turned on Sydney if Michelle had been available to vote out. I feel like she wouldn't have, but, you know, that's something we'll never know for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then what about in terms of our winner?
Well, Michelle had a decision to make that was somewhat similar to Aubrey voting out Debbie. And that was, of course, her vote against Julia. At the time,
see, I would have said that maybe that was her vote against Nick.
I don't think she ever really liked Nick a whole lot, quite honestly. I mean,
well, just going off of my exit interviews with Nick, that he talked about how that they were working together a lot in the pre-merge, that they were sort of working together, and certainly that they were the only two people from the beauty tribe that were together on that other swap tribe. So I feel like that to me, I feel like that that was almost like voting out the person that came with them, not necessarily her closest ally, who was Julia. You know, that would have been like Aubrey voting out Joe, which we ended up, Michelle also did that, voting out another one of her allies, but voting out a person that she felt like, okay, well, this person, I guess, is sort of with me, but, you know, as to get to the greater good, let me get rid of this person.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like she had a huge emotional attachment to Nick. Now, Nick, if you're listening, I'm sorry to break that to you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk to Nick over the course of the summer. I'm working on a couple of these longer interviews. We're going to talk to Michelle also and do a longer interview sometime soon. We're also going to try to get a hold of Sydney as well in the near future. So we'll get do a deeper dive into this subject.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, in my mind, it was the Julia vote that was the harder one for her.
Oh, I mean, absolutely, that was the harder one for her. That I was just saying, like, which one was her Aubrey voting out Debbie moment?
Okay, okay. Now, we talked about the Julia vote before. You know, she might have been the one who proposed it. She might not have been. And again, Julia was leaving no matter what. But Michelle was smart to overcome that emotional attachment in order to get herself further in the game. If, you know, whether or not she planned it, she still deserves to be recognized for not fighting back against it, because we've seen that before. No, don't vote her out, you know, because if she had, she could have easily found herself on the outs, which, you know, some of us expected might happen. And on the flip side, when Sydney talked to Josh, Sydney cited Michelle's vote against Julia as the way Michelle demonstrated her loyalty to Sydney. And that's what got the two of them in lockstep.
Mm.
Now, Michelle also made an interesting comment during Final Tribal Council. She said she played a really good social game, not based on emotion, but on getting to know people as a friendship. And obviously, we'll talk about the social game in a minute here, but this one comment struck me because usually the social game and emotional attachments are pretty intertwined. What I think Michelle was saying here was that she managed to play the social aspect of the game without it becoming a hindrance on her ability to make moves.
Mm-hmm.
So as Nick said in his Jury Speaks video, Michelle hasn't made anybody too angry, even while generally being on the right side of the votes. So like Aubrey did with Ty, Michelle made use of emotional bonds without getting tied down by them.
And also was willing to cut her ally in Julia. And I think that there's been a couple of people in Survivor history who've done this well. I think Danny Boatwright votes out Gary Hogaboom to try to prove like, oh, hey, I'm kind of with you guys. And I feel like that it's usually a good move rather than going down with the ship.
Right. Absolutely.
Good for Michelle for pulling off. Sometimes people are like, okay, you're just being totally transparent. But Michelle did a good enough job of selling that to the people that she was in the alliance with.
Well, I mean, I thought she was being totally transparent, but I was watching it on TV, you know, and even if she was transparent, at least she didn't fight it. And yeah. I think that's, you know, a key fact to remember there.
Let's get to rule number 5, which, of course, is pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourselves. All right. So I don't think we had any politics or controversial beliefs other than, hey, this chicken is a person from the final three. So in terms of pretending to be nice, all right, just to go back to Ty, obviously this is a problem. He wasn't pretending to be nice. He actually is nice.
Yeah. And, you know, early in the season, he was the social game superstar because he was really being nice. And that was his personality. And it described him most of the way through. He fed everyone. He fed the chicken. He supported everyone. And he was nice. Pretty much, well, almost all the time. As Julia had said in interviews after being voted out, people loved him out there. And so I took that as, oh, well, people on the jury are going to love him. But Julia also said in her Jury Speaks video that while she had a lot of respect for Ty when he was nice and being a provider, she lost respect for him due to his strategic mistakes. And those errors were what caused people to get pissed at Ty. It wasn't his personality. It wasn't his social game. But with that said, he did make several social missteps near the end, especially as it related to Michelle. He called her out in tribal council as not really being part of the alliance. He tried to talk to her after that tribal council, but ended up, in my opinion, making things worse. I don't think that latter part impacted his game, but the tribal council performance may have soured jurors even further on him.
What about Michelle and Aubrey?
I think clearly Michelle did a good job in terms of pretending to be nice and playing the social game. Well, okay, not I think. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Aubrey noted...
But was she pretending?
I'm going to go with yes.
I think certainly with Nick that we have evidence where she's telling us in confessional...
I don't need to be carried, bro.
And Nick doesn't seem to know that that's how she feels.
Well, and she also was making kind of snarky comments on Twitter about, oh, Nick's gone. Who's going to tell me how to regulate my alcohol intake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
so she did do a good enough job of trying to keep her feelings hidden about certain people.
Right. You know, even Aubrey noted at least a couple times that Michelle made no enemies and had a great social game.
Mm-hmm.
And Sydney said in her Jury Speaks video that Michelle was all kinds of fun in a party girl type of way. I don't know what kind of parties they were having there. Maybe that involves the alcohol. I'm not sure. Yeah. But you know, Michelle wasn't the only one. At the same time Sydney said that about Michelle, she also called Aubrey a ball of sunshine, funny, great to be around. Though she did note Michelle was more fun. It's that whole party girl thing again. But it's not like Sydney felt Aubrey was bad at this rule, as some have suggested. And I really do think Aubrey had a great social game, at least with some people, like Joe and Ty and Sydney. Now, it's a bit less clear regarding some of the others. And there may be something of a disconnect here because Aubrey, you know, talked about how the best way to play is to deal with people one on one. Because you avoid group dynamics, you find out what really makes them tick. And that sounds like a good way to make a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
But in Jason's Jury Speaks video, he said Aubrey wouldn't talk to him much. Though he admitted the few times she did, she seemed like a sweet girl. So, you know, that's going on. And I would also be remiss if I didn't mention Joe's comments in his Jury Speaks video. Because he even said a couple things indicating that Aubrey's mind was always going to the point that she could get preoccupied, which could have interfered with her social game a bit. I don't think that really impacted things a whole lot, but I think we all know someone like that. You're talking to them and they're paying attention to something else, and it can be a little annoying. You know, it's a little off-putting. So I don't think that Aubrey played a poor social game, but maybe not an A-plus social game.
Okay.
So I would say overall, the social game helped Michelle the most. It helped Ty quite a bit early, but not so much at the end, and was probably pretty neutral for Aubrey.
All right, so rule number six is don't be too much of a threat. So where do you want to begin this rule?
I want to start with our winner, because Michelle really excelled at this rule.
She did a good job with this.
Yeah, I think it helped her quite a bit. You know, for a large part of the game, many of the players thought Michelle was just floating along, not
except
doing
Ty.
Much. Well, except Ty. That was later, though. Even yeah. earlier, I don't know that he, you know, even noticed her. You know, and that isn't necessarily thought of as a good strategy, but it can work when it's done right, as we've seen throughout the years. And I think it worked again here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard that Michelle's application video for the show talked about her being a kick-ass bitch.
I believe it's a badass bitch.
Badass bitch. I'm sorry. Yes. I got the wrong ass.
Yeah. She yeah. was kick-ass when she knocked over the puzzle.
Oh, okay. So a badass bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's not the side she showed to the other players in the early goings. And this is apparently what threw Nick off a bit. I didn't realize so many people scouted potential Survivor castmates by looking at their videos online. It turned out, you know, because Neil saw it too, it turned out.
Yeah.
This is just news to me. I don't know. Maybe if I applied, I would know this better.
Either that or he spent a lot of time at Ponderosa with Nick.
Well, that's a good point. Okay. I had forgotten that those two were pretty much joined at the hip at Ponderosa. So,
yeah.
So anyway, now Michelle said in one interview that Nick's view of her was understandable because that was what she showed him, indicating that she was switching up which parts of herself she showed and when. After all, she told us that, you know, bro, I know. But I don't recall her ever saying that to Nick directly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, several of the jurors also talked about how Michelle was thought of as almost a non-player early in the game. So Julia said at the beginning of her game was kind of weak and she was being dragged along. Scott went so far as to compare her to Joe as just existing at that point in the game. But by being in that position, whether it was on purpose or by accident, she made herself into a non-threat, and that image stuck for a long time, which let her move forward in the game. As Michelle said at the reunion, she used her story as a beauty girl to grow. She had to prove that she could fight and that she could be smart, but first she had to be non-threatening to make that story work for her.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like by the time people realized Michelle had become a threat, they only had that one real opportunity to get rid of her. Ty tried to convince them, but no one else sided with him. After that, what happened? Joe was medevaced, and Michelle took herself to the final three without anybody else having a chance to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was too late. By the time they realized that she was indeed a threat, it was too late. And that journey from non-threat to challenge winner helped impress several of the jurors who were looking for a reason to award that $1 million.
It can happen very fast, David. Blink of an eye. Yep.
Suddenly the season's over and you got $1 million, you know.
Or somebody else does.
Or somebody else does. Yeah.
All right. Well, then, what about in terms of Aubrey? Don't be too much of a threat. We definitely saw people talking about Aubrey as a threat in the game. How did she do with this role?
Yeah, she's an interesting person here because, you know, as Ty was debating whether to go with his emotions or strategy, he correctly said, Aubrey's a threat to both of us. And he was speaking for the other players as well. You know, Joe thought Aubrey would win. Sydney saw Aubrey as a threat. Michelle thought Ty handed Aubrey $1 million when he sided with her at Final Four. All of us watching on TV thought so too. Well, all of us except those who were worried about Edgic. But you know, the common theme is that all those players and those of us at home saw the moves Aubrey was making. She was working with them, so they knew what she was doing and how she was working to direct the votes and corral players like Joe and Ty. One of the things Jason said after the game was that if you're not working with a certain player, you may have no idea what they were doing. And that was clearly the case here. Aubrey's allies knew what she had done and saw her as a threat, but they still couldn't manage to stop her from getting to the end. TV viewers knew what she had done and saw her as likely to win it all because the others couldn't stop her. But those who were charged with casting the votes didn't know all she had done. So the threat didn't materialize there.
And then in terms of Ty as a threat?
I would say he was kind of the flip side of Michelle's journey. He was such a threat early on that Sydney famously said she didn't want to go to no final three with no Ty.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like everyone else agreed. But the more he hung around, the less of a threat he became. His gameplay was just not respected by the jurors, and he made too many enemies. I thought as recently, quite honestly, as last week, that he might be able to overcome it. But that was clearly not the case. Problem, I think, was he couldn't explain his game moves, so the jurors discounted them. And I think part of the reason he couldn't explain his game moves was that, as we've discussed, a number of them were made for emotional reasons or under advice from someone else, or they just didn't work. So he kind of went from being threat level red to threat level meh.
All right. Since we're not voting people out, does the vote out the weak and strong, then the weak, then the strong have any impact in what the result of the season was?
Nope. We're done with that one.
Okay. All right. So in terms of these appendices, do whatever it takes to get idols. We saw that Ty had an idol famously throughout the game. Aubrey never did. Michelle never did. So how did these three do with this appendix?
Well, obviously, Ty was the star. He yes. began looking for idols right away in very amusing fashion.
Yeah, just give me five more minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he basically destroyed his feet and thighs while getting the idol. And then he played with that idol to become a part of new alliances and eventually blindside one of them. And this is one thing I want to mention specifically, because there were people on the jury, people watching the show, who criticized Ty for not playing his idol. And I disagree with that, because it's true that no idols were used, but I would say that idols were played. You know, we may disagree with some of the moves Ty made, but he was definitely playing with the idol to his advantage. He didn't need to actually use it, and then he didn't have the opportunity to do so in what would have been the final tribal council where he could have.
In terms of the second appendix and the much more relevant one, it deals with the final tribal council and how the jury is voting. All right, so where do you want to start this discussion?
Yeah. You know, I thought the jury phase would be where Aubrey would really shine. And that was one reason that the others thought she was a threat, because she would be able to explain her gameplay to the jurors. But it didn't work out that way. Several jurors said the same thing that we always see them say, that almost everyone showed up with an open mind. We know that's rarely the case. And the Jury Speaks video showed it was utter baloney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of them had their minds made up in advance. Scott, Julia, and Jason all knew at the very least they would not be voting for Aubrey, and that they would probably be voting for Michelle. You know, Joe claimed to be open-minded, but come on, he was always voting for Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie said she was sticking by her promise to never, ever write down Aubrey's name, and then crafted a rationalization for voting for a winner around what Michelle did and what Ty did or didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So her
the Alicia Calloway.
Yeah, it's unclear to me whether or not Nick knew what he was doing ahead of time, but I really feel like Sydney may have been the only juror who didn't come in knowing exactly what she was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you could feel that. Well, I don't know if we could feel it, but Aubrey could feel it when she walked in. In her interview with you, she said she knew right away she wasn't going to be able to sway the jury. And yeah, obviously she was right. You know, based on what Jason has said, she talked about how she played the game, but they just didn't believe her. And because of the way things worked out, you know, originally I had expected to go into a lot of detail about the jury because of what we saw. But if none of those arguments matter, I don't know that we spend a huge amount of time going over it. Still, it may be instructive for future players who are listening, so I think we should at least briefly talk about it. I think that Aubrey had the best overall jury arguments. And it turns out a lot of what she said and explained was cut, meaning it was probably even better if the jurors had believed her.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I thought Aubrey gave Debbie a very good answer, you know, putting the vote against her in the context of the game, but still showing a fondness for her. And, you know, that was why a lot of people watching were certain Debbie had voted for Aubrey to win. But no, Debbie stood by her pledge. She wasn't going to vote for her. You know, Aubrey also did other things, like she tossed a nice little bomb at Michelle during questioning to prove Michelle didn't know what was really happening at Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought Aubrey summed up everything very well in her final words.
No.
That's not to say Aubrey was the only one. I thought Michelle gave a pretty good answer to, for example, Julia, on how it took her a little while to get started in the game and excel in it. Steven went so far as to tweet that Michelle was doing a phenomenal job of telegraphing her gameplay to the jury. I didn't personally see it as quite that great, but, you know, it was pretty good. A key here, though, is that the jury was looking for a reason to vote for Michelle. So they ate it up. Mm-hmm. And she even pulled out the tears in her final words. I didn't think it would work, but hey, it didn't hurt.
They love it.
Yeah. And then we have Ty.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone, including his fellow players, expected him to kind of fall apart in the end because Tribal Council had not been his strong point up to now. And, well, he did. You know, I think part of it was, as you have said on earlier podcasts, that English is not his first language. And part of it was just his personality as well. He told Josh in his interview that Tribal Council, that final one, was pretty brutal, and he was fearful during the whole thing because of how hostile the jury was. He knew he didn't give his best performance. Still, he held his own in several cases, such as his response to Julia. It just didn't matter at the end, though. So, since I mentioned that Sydney and maybe Nick were the only ones who came in willing to be convinced, we should at least talk about what made them vote the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
Nick specifically said in his Jury Speaks video that Aubrey seemed like she was at the head of the alliance with Sydney and making decisions. So he already had in his mind and was open to her discussions of how she played, unlike many of the rest of the jurors. He said right out that he felt she was the smartest person there and wanted to see someone own that they manipulated to win the game. She did that. She answered him, and he knew it was true. So he voted for her. And congratulations to the former RHAP blogger for doing that.
Yes. Well, that's what we like to see out there. I would feel pressure as a podcast. Again, I have no idea if Nick felt any pressure as somebody, okay, I blogged about the show and I sort of have to really take a look at the game or people aren't going to take me seriously. We'll talk to him and we'll see if that was even in his mindset, but it certainly would be in mine if I was on a jury again.
Yes, I would think it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, moving to Sydney, she's a tougher one for me to explain because I don't feel she's done a great job of explaining it herself. So, you know, in her Jury Speaks video, she said, "You can't sulk that you didn't win. It's about who deserves it more." And her criteria were based on how loyal you were. And if you weren't loyal, why not? She didn't respect Ty's jumping around, so that made it between the two women who she had been allies with. And she said she didn't need to hear much from Michelle, but she wanted to know from Aubrey what the plan was. If it was always the plan to vote out Sydney as a threat, then she would have had more respect for that. Okay, that makes sense. But then when Josh interviewed her, she said she voted the way she did because Michelle never wrote her name down and Aubrey did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Both of them wrote down each other's name at that tribal council, the final four. And Sydney said in a secret scene that if she was successful in voting out Aubrey, she just had to hope Aubrey understood that it was a game decision that she had to make and that Aubrey would still vote to give her the win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Aubrey would have. But for some reason, Sydney penalized Aubrey for successfully doing to Sydney what Sydney wanted to do to her. So it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand Sydney's vote. We're going to just have to call that one a toss up.
Yeah, I do think this is something that we touched on in the season. Yeah, I think you could probably count on one hand the number of people who vote for somebody. If one person voted them out and the other person is their friend, I think it's very, very rare that they don't vote for the person who was their friend. And I just think that it's the day after or 2 days after. And I still feel a little burned by this person. I really like this other person. I feel like it wasn't that tough of a call for her.
What's interesting, though, is at the time when she was doing the Jury Speaks, which was when it was closer, that's when she was saying, "You can't be bitter. You got to vote for the gameplay. And if this was always her plan, I'll respect that." It was a year later, you know, at finale night when she was talking to Josh that she said, "Well, I did it because she wrote my name down." You'd think those two things would be reversed.
Well, I don't think anybody on that Jury Speaks video, and again, I'm not sure how much is there, like the person who's conducting that interview is saying, okay, talk through both sides of what you want to do.
Right.
Or if you said, I am 100% voting for? I mean, maybe there's been some instances of that, but maybe they're sort of like, okay, why would you vote for either person in terms of the question that gets asked in that spot? So, I mean, I don't think anybody, where we talk about how people seem like they had their mind made up, nobody is talking about in that Jury Speaks video, well, my mind is made up tonight. I mean, this is all a dog and pony show for me. I know without a shadow of a doubt, I'm casting my vote for Michelle tonight. So nobody even implied that in their Jury Speaks video.
Well, Scott came awfully close.
Yeah, I mean, guess so.
Scott said, you know, there's like a 99 point something percent chance I'm voting for Michelle. Ty is going to have to show me something really special. Mm-hmm.
And the truth is it was probably 100. And he sort of like for the video tried to sort of like make it seem like there was more of a chance.
Yeah. Now, you know, this whole situation I had mentioned before, it would have been interesting to see what would have happened if Aubrey had made it to the end with Sydney, because, you know, like I said last week, and as you just mentioned, you know, if you get voted out by one person and there's another person available, you might vote for the other person to win. But if you go as a team to the finals, then they can't do that to you. They can't pick one or the other. If Sydney and Aubrey had made it there, we would have had a more intriguing little battle there. But I think in this case, you had Sydney, who was hated by Scott, Jason, and Julia, against Aubrey, who wasn't given any credit for making the moves that they made together. I suspect, considering the way, you know, everybody was rooting during that fire-making tiebreaker, that Aubrey would have won. But it's hard to say for sure, because you had the person you didn't like versus the person you didn't respect. Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
So instead, we had Michelle versus Aubrey versus Ty coming in as the final three. And the real decision makers were Jason, Scott, Julia, and Debbie, all of whom had their minds made up before ever getting to tribal council.
All right.
As I mentioned earlier, since the finale, I have seen a lot of people crediting Michelle's social game almost exclusively for her win. And those who say that are right, at least about the fact that Michelle did a good job in that aspect of her game. But that isn't the sole reason why she won. It helped her make it to a good position in the game. It gave her the ability to move more easily between alliances. It may have put people at ease around her, but her social game was not the main reason five jurors chose to give her $1 million. Again, we need to look back to what three of those five voters said about their reasoning for voting Michelle. Jason, Scott, Julia, all said that they were voting based on game. They may have mentioned that Michelle was a nice girl, or her challenge wins, or her underdog status, but emphasis was always on gameplay, not friendliness. So, some more examples. Julia specifically said that her decision would be purely based off of game. Some of that gameplay was strategic, some was challenges, some was growth. But it wasn't just being friendly, it wasn't the social game. And we now know that Julia and the others simply didn't realize the real game that Aubrey had been playing. Michelle had used enough strategy to know when to make jumps and discuss it at the final tribal council. She kept hanging around, and the jurors thought that indicated even more strategy, and her biggest opposition made a crucial mistake. Sarah Freeman,
I like her work,
said on Twitter that Ko-Rong might be the only season that told the story of how the losing finalist won. And to a large extent, I agree with her. The viewers saw all of Aubrey's scheming. But I've said for many years now that even though scheming and plotting is the most important single factor, the best schemer just doesn't always win. You might be able to attest to that.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You've heard that, yeah, over your many years of podcasting only.
It comes up.
Yeah. There are many other variables, not the least of which is that the other players have to know how strategic you're being. In the end, we have an irony. I don't think the producers showed us enough of Michelle's game to make some of us feel satisfied with her winning as we were watching it. But Aubrey lost in large part because she didn't show enough of her game to the other players to make them feel satisfied with voting for her to win.
So are you saying that the people on the jury felt like Michelle had the winner edit? Was that really what happened?
That's right. That's right.
She had the winner edit in the long version?
Yes, yes. For those who say there must have been something we didn't see in order to explain the 5-2 vote, I've heard that a lot. Well, there must be, because all those people voted for her.
Yeah.
It turns out that's not the case, because those five votes were cast for Michelle for at least three different reasons.
Yes.
I can't fully explain Sydney, but Debbie was bitter, And the other three didn't see how Aubrey played the game. Jason specifically told me, should Aubrey be the winner now? Yes, but Michelle won at jury time. Aubrey played too good for her own good. Now, what could Aubrey have done differently to change the outcome? You asked that earlier. Well, mostly people have been talking about specific actions like not voting out Debbie or taking out Michelle earlier or not letting Joe eat too much meat. But it's not one simple thing. It's more her overall gameplay and showing people what she was doing while simultaneously not drawing too much attention for doing it. And that's a hard place to be. Meanwhile, Michelle played a game of steadily getting better. Now, this reminds me of when I was in college. Okay. You'll have to run with me.
Where are we going with this, David?
Yeah, you'll have to run with me here. I had a free elective, so I took a class on introductory tennis.
Okay.
All right. I had played tennis since I was young because my grandfather enjoyed the game, so I didn't really need an introduction, but it sounded like fun, maybe, you know, an easy grade. In the first class, the teacher said we would not be graded at the end by how well we did, but by how much we improved. So I immediately knew I had to downplay my previous experience and start out looking worse than I really was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was no John McEnroe by any stretch of the imagination, but I made sure to come off worse than I was. And then I allowed myself to improve throughout the class, ended up with an A. I feel like Michelle did something similar. She went from applying and saying she was going to be a badass bitch, but when she got to the game, she kept that version of herself hidden, whether mm-hmm. on purpose or just due to circumstances. As the game went on, she felt more comfortable. That version of herself eventually came out in challenges, standing up for herself at tribal councils where the jury could see her. Michelle's game managed to be both non-threatening to her fellow players and impressive enough to the jurors, while Aubrey's was almost exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And Ty, well, he just alienated too many people without being able to explain his reasoning for doing so.
Not Sia.
Yeah.
The most important juror of them
all.
That's
right. That's right. Well, $1 million is still worth more than $50,000.
Okay. Well, she sells a vote.
Yes, that's true. But and she gave it to him mostly for emotional instead of strategic reasons, which mm-hmm. was also the way he played his game. Michelle didn't need to be carried, brah.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
But Aubrey did need to carry out a better job of showing the jurors how she had been playing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ty needed to play more with his brain instead of his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why Michelle won and Aubrey and Ty lost.
Okay. All right. Well said. Great job by Michelle this season, and glad we got to talk about some of the things that she did well in addition to talking about what Aubrey could have done better. And I do think that both of them, in different ways, played a really strong game this season.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
David, where do we go from here? Anything that you feel like needs to be tweaked going into season 33? Anything in terms of make sure you always tweet in terms of being a good millennial Survivor player?
That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, if there are a bunch of millennials there, then certainly, you know, maybe we have more Twitter press conferences to look forward to.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. You know, I did just find out because I didn't know. But after this came out, I found out I'm Gen X. Okay. So clearly, this has had a huge impact on the way I live my life, such that, you know, you should define me that way and put me into a tribe based on that.
Okay. All right. So we will discuss what the best way for these Gen Xers and these millennials to go ahead and play out their game in Survivor 33. David, what's the hashtag for this discussion of why Michelle won?
Well, I'm going to toss this one back to you and see if you have any ideas, because my brain was just wiped out after figuring this all out here.
How about hashtag elective tennis?
All right, let's go with that. No one will see that one coming.
Yeah.
Total blindside.
Okay. I wonder if Debbie was ever a tennis pro.
Probably. That's probably one of the things. We haven't talked about all the jobs that she ended up having when Jeff gave her 30 seconds. Although that is how I lost the who wasn't going to get a question pool to Bryce Isaiah, because Jennifer's name was mentioned during that segment when Debbie said, no, not motor. I didn't get paid to ride motorcycles, Jennifer. So by mentioning a name of somebody on my team, that gave Bryce the 1 point, and it was enough to win the game. So it was really a 1-0 match, real soccer match, David.
Wow. That, well,
or
that
in your world, we would call that 15 love.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in the world that you're about to inhabit this week, that's called a one outer.
Yeah, one outer. That's right. All right. So looking forward to seeing you at Run It Up Reno. If you want more information about that and the Pepper Mill, go to runitupreno.com. Of course, you could follow David Bloomberg all off season long at David Bloomberg. Will you be having any Twitter press conferences with Big Brother players this summer?
I doubt it. I haven't decided if I'm watching Big Brother yet. I that's a big decision. It's a big dedication of time that I have to figure out.
All right. Well, good stuff all the way around. We are going to have a lot more coming up this week while I am on the road. We're going to have that big show that we're doing out in Reno. Plus, we'll do News AF live and a couple other things along the way. So looking forward to that. Looking forward also to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments of robinsonwebsite.com. Have a good one. Take care, everybody. Bye.